Well, hello, everybody. We are on the 79th program of the Rays and Initiations webinar commentary. We've finished talking a little bit about the monad behind all the aspects of the universal mind, at least as that universal mind expresses itself on the cosmic physical plane. There are higher areas where it does express itself. And, excuse me, we've been talking about the Master Jesus. Well, and that he reenacted all five initiations for the benefit of humanity. Well, reenacted would mean he had taken them before. So I think DK is working here with some combination of the Christ and the Master Jesus, or the Christ in the body of the Master Jesus, because the Master Jesus was an initiate at the time who had taken the third initiation. So his taking of the fourth was an enactment and not a reenactment. And if we count a kind of earlier resurrection as the fifth initiation, instead of as the seventh, then he was, I think, helped to enact that. But of course, he had not yet taken the full fifth initiation, which really was to be taken through the vehicle of Apollonius of Tyana, whom I presume was the disciple of Master Jesus, or the initiate Jesus. So the reenactment part, I think, relates to what the Christ was able to do through the vehicle of the initiate Jesus. And enactments occurred at the fourth initiation for Jesus, and maybe if we consider the fifth initiation to be a kind of resurrection, there was a kind of resurrection at that point. And the question is, well, in my mind anyway, could the Master Jesus or the initiate Jesus have handled that himself, or did he need the assistance of the Christ? So as Master DK says, one day the gold and silver threads of this story between the Christ and Jesus in Palestine long ago will be disentangled, and we will know something about the episodes in the life of the Master Jesus and the great spiritual events when the Christ was using that vehicle. So that's a little bit of a review there, and see if there's anything else. Anyway, we're speaking largely of the third initiation at this point, and DK reminds us here, in this dramatic picturing of the third initiation, the three disciples, or the three vehicles of the personality, prostrate themselves on the ground, and the Master himself, the glorified personality, is transfigured before them. Now, here again, the question is, although Jesus was a transfigured initiate already, could he reenact this at will, or was it again the Christ within his vehicle? There's so much about this subtle method of the higher initiate using the vehicle of the lower initiate, so much about this that we do not fully understand, at least I don't. And I'm sure that it will be forthcoming in Revelation. So anyway, our discussion is largely now focused on the third initiation. The personality is now possessed of knowledge. Remember how much the fifth ray is involved with this third initiation. So the personality is now possessed of knowledge, for fifth ray energy has done its needed work. Indeed, it is the, above all, the ray of knowledge. And I think there it is. The disciple is also aware that he is in possession of the wisdom which enables him to use the knowledge for the furtherance of the plan. The love wisdom, LW, don't you think? LW. And we'll do love wisdom. Maybe I'll regret that it's in lowercase, but we'll see. The love wisdom energy enters strongly at this first of the solar initiations, and therefore to work as an illuminating factor in the world of men. You know, the third degree initiate, okay, let's see, third degree initiate is in touch with the with an attenuated version of the light supernal through the combination of Venus and the Sun. He knows clearly what has been accomplished and senses something of what lies ahead. We might say that this is a third degree is a pivotal point. It is the first real initiation as a hierarchy considers reality. The great principle of cleavage, which the fifth ray governs, and though remember also it does govern the fusion of various factors, as in the word of power or mantram, three minds unite. So the great principle of cleavage, which the fifth ray governs, is the dominating factor in his time sense. And we might say at this time, even though the eternal now begins to mean something to him, not fully, more at the fourth degree, but somewhat. So anyway, the sense of cleavage here is the dominating factor in his time sense. He now differentiates sharply between the past and the present and that which has to be ascertained in the future. The we might call it the probationary past as a disciple and not as a true initiate. Okay, so let's see, the, a probationary initiate is really what he has been at the first two degrees. Now he is the authentic thing, the first solar initiation. He's entered into the love wisdom aspect of initiation particularly. So he now differentiates sharply, and that's such a such a fifth ray word. So the sharpening of the discriminative faculty between the past, between past and present, where he is for the first time able to really focus in all of the gifts that he has accumulated over the ages and to use them, i.e. he can focus within the egoic lotus or causal body as naturally as he once focused within the personality, and that which has to be ascertained in the future. And let's be clear about this. Ascertainment is definite knowledge. Cleavage, in the sense of separativeness, is finished for him because of this, the fusion factor between the soul and personality is very strong. So we're not talking about separativeness or separateness. And he now feels and knows something of the essential unity of all manifested life. And there's that word something. You know, it's not complete, not by any means, but it is of the same quality as that which will be complete. Excuse me. Therefore, from the angle of space, he has dominated and overcome cleavage and division in the sense of time. He has not. Yes, you know, I've always thought that the eternal now is more difficult to apprehend than the non-existence of space. Here-ness of all things and all perceivables. Okay, so space, the idea of separation because of space is overcome. The idea or experience of separation because of supposed space is overcome. But it is more difficult. DFC. Okay. Well, it's just. Okay. Difficult to render all times forever as now. That's very difficult. You know, if you work on it, you'll see that it is not easily apprehended, and various other ways that one might try to do that. DFC, DFCL. Okay, let's do that. Difficult. All right. The great heresy of separateness no longer exists in his consciousness. At least in terms of the identity of all possible perceivables. The consciousness of the initiatory process is not yet over, however, for it involves the recognition of time. And you kind of wonder, does this have to wait until the fourth degree and the incoming of a rather full apprehension of the Buddhic process at the fourth degree? Perhaps. Well, we can continue to work on this, you know, bring all things here, wherever they are. Simply imagine that they are here and that there is no extension in space which separates one thing from another. Okay. No extension in space which separates one thing from another. And later, no extension in time, which separates one time from another. And that may be harder to grok, you know, harder to fathom. I've always found it so, but maybe for some people it's not. During the initiatory process, between the second and third initiations, the initiate has to battle with illusion in exactly the same sense as the earlier battled with glamour. So, you know, if you think you find yourself in that stage of development between the second and third, it is illusion you are dealing with, because at the second degree, you've achieved some degree of spiritual intelligence and mental illumination, not the full enlightenment, perhaps, of the third degree, the relatively full enlightenment, but you have achieved something which shows that the heresy of separateness or separativeness is more philosophical, and separativeness is a lower ego attitude, you might say. So we have to eliminate illusion and end the fragmentation which appears between various perceptions. End the frag. And I think FRAG. I'm going to call this fragmentation. End the fragmentation which seems to appear between various types of perception. All is whole, all is one. And this has to be realized, inculcated, the point, a necessary point of tension found, where this becomes a realization. Illusion is, now here's one of those important definitions, illusion is, in the last analysis, the control of the mental processes by great and massive thought forms. And they are not illumined thought forms. They are simply thoughts and not illumined. What must take the place of this type of control is the initiate's own illumined apprehension, and then he will find that others have similarly apprehended, but instead of words, as he might have encountered these statements of truth before, and for him they were only words, they will carry truth, because he will have had the same experience as those illumined ones who expressed in terms of words, as let's say is so often the case in the Upanishads. So illusion is, in the last analysis, control of the mental processes by great and massive thought forms. And, you know, not one's own, not having been thought through, not fully understood, and, well, rather accepted at face value and not sufficiently examined for their truth value. The people who are in the state of illusion don't know that they are in the state of illusion. And so they must awaken to the fact that their apprehension is largely a misinterpretation of reality, and this comes with the flashing forth, often unbidden, of the intuition which reveals the reality which they had been misinterpreting. So anyway, this conflict persists from the moment that the disciple has achieved mental polarization and a midway point between the second and third initiations, until he stands before the initiator at the initiation of decision, when the last illusion disappears. Well, there's a lot of information in this little section there, and one thing we learn is that the conflict with illusion occurs at the midway point between the second and third. The beginning of the intense conflict with illusion occurs at the midway point between the second initiation and the third initiation. So let's just say that there's been a considerable overcoming of the world, the flesh, and the devil at the midway point, but to prepare to begin to take the first initiation of Syrian discipleship, which is the third, and the first solar initiation, which is the third, there has to be this battle to overcome illusion, and I would say that the intuition has to be invoked and then evoked as a result of the invocation. And the it's likely that the disciple will be increasingly on the thread with respect to the master and will be able to summon to a degree the intuitive content of the ashram, and the Antikarana will be in process of being built and will be all that much more reliably connected to the abstract mind and somewhat to the intuition, which will help to dispel the illusion. Now, this is interesting because somehow there is a section in which DK describes or tells us that illusion is really overcome at the ninth initiation. Here he tells us the sixth. Well, here, the sixth, when entering fully the monadic vehicle and being restored to monadic consciousness. Anyway, it's a long way ahead of us, but we can understand that illusions relate to the third ray, and the five lower planes of Brahma, of which the Atmak is the top, also relate to the third ray. So this overcoming of illusion is the overcoming of the effects of Brahma on the cosmic physical plane. Now, further, one must overcome the entire cosmic physical plane at the ninth degree. Well, those are just words to us, of course. They kind of fill out a picture or a structure of how things will be, and at least they give us a rational frame to understand and towards which to strive. But we have plenty of work here to do just to make sure that we can stand on the first solar mountaintop, that of the third degree, in truth and in fact, having overcome the ancient authority of the personality. So many who claim they stand there have not really overcome that ancient authority at all, but sadder but wiser, everyone will learn where they really stand and what they still have to do. You feel and comment that the masters are therefore subject to illusion. This they definitely are, and there are great and basic illusions governing life within the hierarchy. What a statement. At least we say, at least this is true of the master, though not as here described of the Chohan. Nevertheless, they are illusions of such a high order that for advanced humanity, they would signify achievement. Higher illusions are achievements for those who are wrestling with lower illusions. So we'll, trade our present illusions in for those that are higher but are still illusions when compared with greater degrees of clarity and realization. So as I said, here we are learning that the illusions are overcome at the sixth degree, but elsewhere, we are told even at the ninth initiation, that's the moment when the illusions of the cosmic physical plane really are overcome. I may not give you more than one instance of such an illusion, but that should prove clear and sufficient. It is not until the sixth initiation of decision that the illusion of the planetary ring pass not finally disappears. Well, you know, there is, at least at this time, there is an escape, a possible escape from the planet. And the realization that there really is no planetary ring pass not. The master then knows that such a limitation is non-existent, let's just say, before it appeared as a kind of barrier, but it is not really real. For him, the choice between the seven paths becomes possible, or the nine paths, as we now understand. This basic illusion constitutes for mankind a great hierarchical mystery and is based upon the principle of privation, by means of which, you see, this is to deny the wider extension. Privation by a great being denies the possibility of a wider extension, or at least the perception of a wider extension, even though extension is not really real. But in the great Mahamaya, we have to act as if it is real. So the principle of privation, by means of which the planetary logos chooses, there's that Saturn word related to rings pass not, chooses is a Saturnian word, and relates to ring pass nots. Whoops. Okay. To circumscribe his freedom and limit his activities. But the boundary, the basic thing, boundary is not real. That's what we are learning here. Though consideration of its unreality, or cognition or perception of its unreality, is not yet given until the possibility of treading the path of the higher evolution exists. So the masters will treat this chosen ring pass not as if it were real, even though ultimately it is not. Well, these are high illusions, and as DK says, for us they would represent spiritual achievement, and I suppose on and on and on. When does the final illusion break? You know, in a way, I have to say, and I do believe it is true philosophically, the entire universe is an illusion, the greatest of all possible illusions. And that's been going on forever. The coming forth from the non-illusory state of the absolute into the illusory state of universe. Any departure from absolute infinitude is an illusion. So let me put that philosophical point down, any departure from absolute infinitude is an illusion. I mean, obviously, it's a very functional illusion. It's an illusion which is habitual forever and has been habitual forever, always forever. And in it we function, in this great Maha Maya, which is the universe, and that's our action. See, all action, in a way, all distinct action is illusory. But this gets so far into, you know, some philosophical observations as to be practically, or in the practical sense, not very useful. This curious freedom from successive limitations is experienced at the third, sixth, and ninth initiations. Well, you know, what have we got there? Maybe I can quickly find something which will tell us or show us what we have. I'm going to go here to the AAB diagrams and do my best to open these up, and we can open that one. And basically, you see, at the third initiation, the illusions of the moon and the lower 18 subplanes are seen through, and they have been a personal ring pass knot. At the illusion of the sixth initiation, the five planes of Brahma are understood as less esoteric and more illusory than the two higher subplanes, and at the ninth initiation, the seven is foregone, and the entire cosmic physical plane is understood as illusory, just as illusory as our etheric physical body is to the one who begins to focus within the soul. So we are talking about this progressive, successive freedom from limitation, experienced at the third, sixth, and ninth initiations, and I've shown on the map how that happens. The limitations are not real, but in terms of the habitual perception of someone who is limited before the third, the sixth, or the ninth initiations, they are as if real, and the perceptions do not extend beyond that point. And by perceptions, I don't always mean subject-object perceptions, because the subject and object have become united, and that's a very important phase of the development of the higher consciousness. So this curious freedom from successive limitations is experienced at the third, the sixth, and the ninth initiations. All of them, you know, multiples of three. There are all three of them, these are all three of them related in a mysterious manner to each other. We might say, you know, leaving behind illusions, leaving behind the illusions of the 18 lower subplanes, well, let's see how many, 35 Brahmic subplanes and the entire cosmic physical plane. Transfiguration leads eventually to decision, which culminates in due time with a final refusal to accept any planetary limitations whatsoever. Refusal to accept, a very interesting phrase. It's as if the limitation is not real, but because There has been an acceptance. It seems real. The unreal illusion has seemed real and has acted as a block on further extension or progress. Excuse me. Anyway, we're dealing with very lofty considerations, and the way is made clear for us. Now, going on, it will be obvious to you that the higher the initiation, the less will any involved energy have a personality control or connection, and we might say this even begins at the third initiation. Progressive and recognized fusions have taken place as one initiation after another is undergone. The whole process in the movement towards re-becoming the one universal logos in full consciousness, the extension reunites with that which is non-extended, is all about fusing with higher and higher points of perception, higher and higher points of tension. We might say the extension, the emanative extension fuses with that which has not emanated. Always something stays at home. Emanative. There we go. The effect of the energy involved will be noted in relation to humanity as a whole, to the work of the ashram within the hierarchy, and to the planetary life. We become more and more a part of that from which we had seemed separated. So fusion is the name of the game. As we progress in consciousness and progress in taking over greater and greater cities and energy skills, which were not available to us as a limited emanation. Our emanation becomes absorbed in greater emanations, which are then lesser to still greater emanations, and they become absorbed in and fused with the still greater emanations until we merge with that which has remained at all times exactly what it is on the highest plane of the universe. But it itself, interestingly, is an emanation from the Absolute, the ray of the Absolute has flashed forth. Now, you know, I'm speaking in terms which obviously are necessarily illusory. But if they... excuse me. If they offer a somewhat more refined and inclusive illusion, then we will ascend through the apprehension of successively attenuating illusions. They become more and more refined, thinner, less substantial, until they disappear altogether. So, this must ever be borne in mind and must necessarily limit the scope of the teaching which I am able to give you. Because, you know, we are not of the initiatory degree which makes it possible to penetrate the even the higher illusions. So we have to be patient and live within the confines of certain illusions that we cannot yet penetrate or break or attenuate until we are able to do so, and then we will recognize that we've been living in a darkened room, as D.K. points out in various places, a darkened chamber, and whole new worlds will unfold to us, the worlds that have always been there, but which we could not possibly apprehend. So anyway, we fuse with ever higher points of view, ever higher points of tension. We re-become these points of tension that we have passed on our emanative journey into successive degrees of non-perceptuality or successive degrees of isolation, of non-contact, and we reascend, re-becoming these points of tension until our little emanation as we experience it right now is lost in ever greater and ascending or retracting emanations. Let me now summarize the effect of this fifth ray energy in relation to humanity and to the individual initiate. He has actually been doing this, but being a master teacher, he knows that if things are to sink in, they need the right kind of organized re-presentation. I gave, first of all, 15 items of information anent this fifth ray energy, or 15 definitions of its activity. You know, this will warrant careful study. Go back and study, as I will, at the right time. Simply because we might say a few useful or maybe even intelligent things about what has been presented does not mean that we are absolved from close pondering of that which has been examined perhaps too rapidly. Number two, let's see, what is this? Let's call the summarized summary. Okay, let's just call it that. Summary. Final summary? Okay, let us see. The effect of this fifth ray energy upon humanity in this fifth root race was considered. It is a race of great initiatory attainment. A race of great initiatory attainment, even as the fifth subrace was the occasion of initiation being far more widely introduced in Atlantis. It was noted that this Aryan effect was dominant and dynamic in the extreme, and that it has greatly hastened human evolution. We might say because sight is now possible. The fifth ray is associated with the principle of sight, so is the second ray in a sense. And with sight, we are able to take in far more of the possible perceivables than we can through hearing or through touch. So a great many more factors are introduced to us, and the fusion of these factors and our relationship to them takes place with increasing rapidity. So the effect upon the fifth root race, yes, and upon, at this moment, the fifth subrace of the fifth root race, the Aryan subrace, or maybe it's sometimes called the Teutonic subrace, which we are now outgrowing, not too rapidly because it still has much more work to do, but the sixth subrace in which the abstract mind will be cultivated is now on the horizon, and some are already responding to it. As a matter of fact, when you begin to read this material from DK, unless there is some degree of the abstract mind operative, it will not be accessible. Point three, I pointed out the close relation between love and mind as follows, the 2 and 5 relation, right? Interesting that Venus has both of those rays. Probably the ultimate monadic ray is ray 2 for Venus, and the soul ray, ray 5, but there's also a 6th monadic ray in there somewhere of a subsidiary nature. Plane 2, the monadic plane, and plane 5, the plane of mind. We remember that the mental ray responds very much to the monadic ray, the mental vehicle to the monadic ray. This is the solar system number 2. Well, it's solar system number 2 of the major solar systems. It's really, interestingly, solar system number 5. So there is another relation between the 2 and the 5. The 2nd major solar system, but the 5th actual solar system. If we consider, let's call it the non-sacred solar systems, maybe, in fact, this is the first really sacred solar system, as in the human being, we do not consider the elemental lunar lives to be sacred, nor do we consider the personality on its own to be sacred, but only once it has been transmuted, transformed, transfigured by the soul. So solar system 2 and root race number 5 on this 4th scheme, in a way. We're 4 from the sun, if counting the usual sacred planets of Vulcan, Mercury, Venus, and then, well, the non-sacred planet, the Earth. So we are root race number 5 in the 4th scheme, in chain number 4, and on the 4th globe. And these, all of these are, what can I call them, relationships of intense light. We remember that the 5th ray lord is the most luminous of all the ray lords, and the 2nd ray souls of human beings are the most illuminated of souls. Okay, so we pointed this out. DK is the old saying, tell them what you're going to tell them, tell them, and then tell them what you told them. So that's what he is doing here for us. In all of these relationships, the 5th in order is the prime agent and revealer of the 2nd type of spiritual energy. We might say that knowledge reveals wisdom, as 5 reveals 2. Ray 5 is not so much associated with wisdom, more with knowledge, and Ray 2 with wisdom, more than knowledge. The 5th ray energy produces 3 major areas of thought, or 3 prime conditions wherein the thought form making energy expresses itself. So, 3 major areas of thought, or 3 prime conditions. Excuse me. Okay. And let's see how he describes these. Science, and he includes here education and medicine under science, philosophy, ideas and ideals, and psychology in process of modern development. And we reference seed group 8. And it seems to me we need SG for seed group. So he's going to let us know in various references how psychology is developing. It requires really a knowledge of the 7 rays and esoteric astrology, and a knowledge of the 4 centers. When we have those 3 subsidiary sciences, we can successfully develop the science of psychology. Now, I wonder, you know, if we can give a Ray assignment to this. Well, not exact, perhaps, but science coming in maybe on the first Ray in its relation to the fifth, philosophy on the third, although it's the love of wisdom, so it has that second Ray component, and psychology on the second Ray and fourth Ray. So 1 and 5, 3 and 2, and 2 and 4. These are ways of looking at the Ray constitution of these various areas of thought. Science, philosophy, and psychology. This fifth Ray energy operates in connection with the law of cleavages later, not making things separate, but making things clear. That's the idea. So what's a fifth Ray, second Ray, fifth Ray, first Ray mode of speaking? Analysis with analysis within the field of synthesis. And DK, you know, so often is telling his students, let me analyze your situation for you. It's not the same as criticizing. It's throwing a helpful, clarifying light upon the situation rather than putting someone down because they have not yet achieved certain things. As the absolute infinite being, seems radical to say so, but we have achieved everything possible forever. It's just a mind-boggling concept altogether that the absolute is what we are, and absolute infinitude is the, if you will, the content of the absolute. The content of the absolute deity. The absolute itself is not a deity. But all of that is discussed more in other books that I've written or am writing, and on some of the programs about identification. It is also responsible for the rapid formation of great conditioning ideologies. So it defines orientations and visions and renders them distinct. So the let's just say that ideology, which arises from the sixth Ray, is also inseparative, inseparable from the fifth Ray. Number 7, this fifth Ray, excuse me, is the important factor in making possible the first major initiation, the transfiguration initiation. What do we have? We have the beginning of light supernal. We have the Ajna center. We have Venus ruling the Ajna center. And the fifth Ray as the soul Ray of Venus. So the lesser light of Venus, very powerful still, leads to the greater light of the sun. And there is this relationship between Venus and the sun, where in Venus stores light of the sun. I think we can find that in the Secret Doctrine references, which are found at the back of Esoteric Astrology. The fifth Ray energy works in three ways in connection with the three aspects of personality. So as the transmuting agent, the physical body, as the transforming agent, the astral body, as the transfiguring agent, the mental body, and if we want to raise this all on a higher turn of the spiral, we will see transmutation as personality, transformation as the work with the soul, and transfiguration as work with the monad. And in rule 10, some of these hints are given. Higher forms of transfiguration, of transformation, and of transmutation are given than simply those that are confined to ruling the three aspects of the normal personality. So, what does he tell us? This gives you much food for thought. Indeed, it does. It indicates the personality goal and the mode whereby it is maintained, you know, through soul, S-L-I-N, soul infusion, and integration with the soul, and a general purification. After the third initiation, we reach out in consciousness to higher expansions of consciousness, and will then enter a realm of ideas which are not yet easy for the disciple to appreciate or understand, and let's just say these pertain to the ideas found within the cosmic etheric planes, buddhic, atmic, monadic, logoic. Much that I will have to say anent ray energy, and the higher initiations will mean little to many, but it will mean much to the initiate consciousness, and let's just say, for which this book is really written. The world initiates will be coming into incarnation at this time and will read my words towards the end of this century with great understanding and, you know, let's just say, hopefully, this has been occurring. DK undertook a massive educational project, and the most frequent users of the books are not even the highest initiates who can benefit most from what he has interpolated or written between the lines in so many places, and especially in certain very advanced books like A Treatise on Cosmic Fire and The Rays and The Initiations. While volumes 1 and 2 of Esoteric Psychology are written for first degree initiates, by the time we get to The Rays and The Initiations, he is presuming the initiate consciousness. And, you know, we can attempt to somewhat understand what he is attempting to say. So this will be the end of Rays and Initiations webinar commentary number 79. And our pages looks like we're going to begin the fourth initiation. So page 599, hope I'm correct there, to 602. And our date is the 2nd of March, 2017. And we'll be beginning here of Rays and Initiation webinar commentary number 80, from page 602. And we'll see when it's possible to do that. Would that it were possible every day to do this. It's just the beginning. just scratching the surface of a book in which so many sentences per page can be taken as subjects for deep contemplation and brooding. But we have to make the start somewhere, and although much has been given, it has been, in my view, superficially absorbed. And not necessarily by everybody, maybe there have been some deep absorbers. But I consider my own absorption superficial, and I've been at this 50 years, I guess, about studying these things for about that long. So we will continue as we work through part two of the rays and the initiations. Thank you for being here, and then we're moving on to number moving on here to number 80. See you soon.